Hello, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Film Nerds, episode 273 in the Nerd Garage.
I was just fascinated with watching our guest eat his yogurt lewdly.
There was some very lewd yogurt eating that just happened.
If you're going to eat yogurt, you have to do it lewdly. There's really no other choice.
Well, I think we're going to have to take this up with HR. We're going to have to We're going to have to get you into the CFN HR office.
Our guest was telling us a story about how a customer had telling him he was eating his yogurt lewdly, which is such an odd complaint to make. Like, loudly, maybe inappropriately, maybe. Mm-hmm. Let's even go with just like, you know what? I just don't like the way you're eating the yogurt.
Certainly.
But to go right all the way to lewd, there's something wrong with that person.
Well, I'll tell you this, too, especially because the my place of business is inherently sauce-based. Right. So everybody's got a mouthful of fucking thumbs at all times. So what the fuck are you complaining about? Look around at every other goddamn table. People are licking each other's faces because there's goddamn sauce dripping off their chins. Give me a fucking break. The whole joint's a Jenna Jameson movie. So you're going to fucking single me out for eating yogurt? Get fucking bombed.
I hope that's in there like... LLC documents. This is a sauce-based business company.
Absolutely.
Folks, that is the... We keep saying our guest. We might just maybe call him by name.
Why not?
Mike Schmidt.
Hi.
Mikey Lude Yogurt Schmidt.
Do I have to sign, like, do I have to sign a fucking grease pen board like that old show? Yeah. Let's do it.
So this is episode 273.
Yeah.
A lot going on.
Boom.
And we're going to be talking about a lot of movies. We're going to be talking about Jurassic World and Love and Mercy and, of course, Earbuds. And you told Mike we cut him out of the movie, right?
Yeah, completely cut out of the movie. We're going
to
tell him
so we don't have to go over that then.
No, no.
Okay.
But I will get all my footage, right, to use for my own purposes. Just sit home and jerk off and watch myself yell.
Could we get some footage?
That's good. Did that make the cut? I just told somebody about that the other day. I'm like, I sat there and Graham yelled at me for like 8 minutes once.
Chris wants it in the movie. I don't. So we're trying to figure out what to do.
I love it. I want it in the movie. And then we need to cut in that scene from Natural Born Killers where Robert Downey Jr.'s producer puts her finger in her nose and goes like, hey, you're just wasting fucking time here, pal. When he said all the shit go down in Grenada and he's over there yelling at fucking Woody Harrelson. God damn, I love that movie. Why? I don't know. Are we talking about that this week? Natural Born Killers, did that come out?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I can talk about that all day.
The re-release of Natural Born Killers. Earbuds is actually going quite well.
Yep. We're down to a...
2 hour cut.
A 2 hour cut, yeah.
Which is big. Mike Schmidt, you are still in it, buddy.
All right, hanging on.
Hanging on.
I've made the final 2 hours of, no doubt, the 300 hours of footage you filmed.
Oh, yeah, I think it was even more.
Oh, God.
Let me ask you this. Have I edged out the fucking Japanese girl eating natto on a fucking plane in Tokyo? Did that happen?
No.
I just want to make sure that if she's still in the film, no. By all means. Let's make sure you guys went to Japan to talk to a nobody for good reason.
Yeah. It's not about the earthquake that happened, the global event, and how podcasting helped her, Mike. It's just watching her eat with chopsticks.
Again, she's eating natto.
Yeah. No,
fermented bean curd. I'm teasing. She's listening, and she knows I'm a fan.
You hear that, Sinai? Mike Schmidt just insulted you and then complimented you.
Yes.
Compliment strong, but yeah.
Culturally, that's a long compliment. In a culture that doesn't exist.
Oh, the Mike Schmidt, culture?
In the lewd yogurt-eating culture?
Yes.
That was a really good compliment.
Culture, yeah.
In a sauce-based culture, that is considered...
Yeah, now I could lewdly compliment her if you'd like me to. I could make that happen in a fucking heartbeat.
Oh.
Shimasai. Is that what they say? Right when you walk in a sushi bar?
Yeah, Mike.
Think so.
Sandy, big fan Japan, shout out across the pond from Mike Schmidt giving you a lewd-based comment.
That literally sounded like something Tom Likas would say. That was like, Sandy, big fan Japan. Like, it was like that, because she's a big fan in Japan, and her name is, you called her Sandy?
Sinai.
Sinai, but I thought you said Sandy.
We call her Sandy sometimes.
Oh, all right.
Because early on, we mispronounced her name. Mm-hmm. Her name is Sinai Narita?
Narita.
I did that with my girlfriend the first time she ever like wrote me on my show. And she had a couple of names, and I chili dipped them both. Like, and it's like, I'm a guy who prides myself on always fucking nailing everything, and I'm like the guy who, so I overpronounced, like, I didn't say what they should have been, and I threw a little fucking spin on it because I thought I was fucking smart. And no, all wrong. So Sanai, you're lucky these two are here to Sherpa me.
So let's to be clear, when your girlfriend first emailed you for the first time, yes, you all immediately started calling her your girlfriend, though, right?
Oh my God, everybody who emails me is my girlfriend immediately. Yeah. If you take long enough to type something out and hit send, I love you.
Yeah. First time Mike and I performed together 20 years ago in Chicago, he said, hey, you're my girlfriend now. It was weird.
And he said, get out of the fucking car.
Felt a little more prison-like, like he had just purchased me from the Aryans. Yeah.
Purchase that gave you away, motherfucker. Don't lie.
Well, you know.
No, absolutely, yeah.
Purchased you to cover another debt.
True.
Look, those funny bones back in the old day were rough places, and I needed protection, and Mike was my guy.
Yeah, if you were a middle, it was fucking heavy skating, boy. I'll tell you what. You didn't want to shower with the headliners. You never knew what the fuck was going to happen. You know this, Chris. Fucking, you work at the Improv in Vegas.
Oh, my God.
How many times you been passed around like a Kleenex? It's terrible.
Well, they call
it you're going to eat a yogurt before every one of our shows from now on because you come in on fire. You go one deep into a lewd Chobrani and all of a sudden you come out just throwing fireballs.
273, man. I had to bring it.
Yeah. Jesus.
Ep 273. I don't fuck around.
Oh, special eps. Speaking of Hong Kong, Tokyo.
Sorry, we're not periscoping.
So Jill, literally, she was my girlfriend the second she wrote me. I was just like, I'm just mooning over it. Still married like an idiot. Just like, yay.
A pretty girl likes me.
Yay, wee. And still does, fucking shockingly. Although this show may take care of that.
That's what we hope for.
Did you bring another yogurt?
I do. I have it in the fridge, locked and fucking loaded.
Oh, right. That's going to be for the
spoiler. So when you start to come down from that one.
Well, I went passion fruit early. I got mango backup.
Mango's for the spoiler rep.
Oh, of course.
I always go mango spoiler rep.
Well, I should have brought a third for the fucking, the other one, the extra episode.
Yeah.
We'll have to go buy one.
During the break. Well, let's get into it. Jurassic World. We all saw it. Should we let our guests go first?
Yeah, Mike, you go first.
Mike, Jurassic World.
All right,
now, first of all, did you see it 3D, IMAX, regular?
No, I saw it opening night in the ArcLight in the Big Dome, which is not in 3D.
Okay.
I was kind of surprised, but I wanted to get first showing.
And you wanted big screen.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
And I brought, my girl lives in Wisconsin, and she doesn't go to a lot of movies, so I said, when you come to a Hollywood movie in the ArcLight, it's going to be giant. And I'll tell you what, this is the second time I brought her to the ArcLight. The first time was the Ghostbusters reissue. Literally, we're the only two people in the theater. Not even, so I'm like, it's a lot different when there's people in here and they like enjoying themselves. So we went to opening night, and so what, I'm supposed to tell you exactly how I felt right away, and then you guys are going to jump in? Because I want to, it's going to be more of a discussion, right?
Yeah.
Because here's the thing.
You've done the show before.
I don't think I have.
Once a year.
You don't have to deconstruct it,
just talk.
Okay, good. I loved it. Yeah. I mean, it's summer in 2 hours. Literally, it's just, it's what it's supposed to be. Because again, I can get into the nitpicking and the carving it up, but overall, man, I had a fucking great time. I mean, it was just a full house of people going crazy, and there's dinosaurs, and then, you know, I there's probably 8 too many shots of the dinosaur peeking around a corner. But other than that, it was fucking fantastic. It was exactly what it was supposed to be, and I was very happy with it.
I couldn't agree more. I'll tell you what. The first, by minute 40, I was starting to get a little like, okay. I was starting to get a little annoyed because I hadn't seen enough of it. I was like, are they going to Godzilla me and not show me the goddamn thing I came to see?
The Indominus Rex.
Because at first I'm like, okay, cliche characters, cliche backstories, fine, got it. You know, it's Spielberg, even though whoever mope they hired to direct it, it's Spielberg.
Oh, it was Colin Trevorrow. He's the guy that did Safety Not Guaranteed, which is a great movie.
It's a great movie, and he did a good job with it. But
there were people over his shoulder.
There was
the whole
one guy.
Time.
There was Steven Spielberg over his shoulder.
Oh, sure.
Colin, you do whatever you want, but this needs to be in this. You know, anyway. Yeah. Yes, sir, Mr. Spielberg.
Well, because when Colin was initially going to do it, I'm sure those two fucking mop-headed kids weren't in it. And Spielberg goes, we need kids, and they need to be in danger at some point. All right, go ahead and throw them in. You know, that's a Spielberg trait.
There was probably
trait.
A team of Universal executives behind it.
Sure, certainly.
It was all that, like, kid stuff and all this, divorced parent, all this backstory. I was like, okay, fine. And I was like, sitting there, and I went to go see it at the Chinese theater in IMAX, you know, laser 3D.
Right.
Which I am now a fan of. I've talked at great length about how I don't like 3D on this show, and only for specific movies. Well, this is one of them, and it was a packed house. And then the second half of the movie, it is everything you want. It is a goddamn just 3D dinosaur fight. And I can't tell you, in 3D, that third act where the dinosaurs are just going ape shit.
Yeah.
Not a spoiler, by the way.
Not a spoiler. And as
although a great title for the sequel.
Yeah. Dinosaurs go ape shit.
And that's the thing. Like, we talked about this. Jurassic Park, it's the same story every time. Dinosaurs escape, they start killing people.
There's literally, that's the one really fascinating thing about this franchise. There's literally only one thing that could possibly happen in this franchise.
Every time.
People make dinosaurs, or they go look for dinosaurs, and then they get eaten by dinosaurs.
Right.
That's literally, that's the only thing that could happen. Like, what?
But that's the only thing you want to happen.
That's it. And right. They did it great. And I'm telling you.
I don't want
to
see my dinner with T-Rex. I mean, I don't give a fuck about that. I want to see him fucking chomping the shit out of people. Let's
and
do it.
They did it.
Yeah.
We'll get into on the spoiler, the specifics of it, but I got to tell you, I jumped out of my chair 5 times because of the 3D.
Wow.
Because I went, ah! I mean, literally, and then would start laughing. And you're right, Mike. If you can, see this at the packed house.
Oh, please.
The cheering, the yelling, the laughing, and there's some great, like, twists and stuff we won't get into in this episode that are... It was everything you wanted a Jurassic movie to be.
It was summer in 2 hours. They went, hey, let's get that summer blockbuster template out and make it. And they fucking did. They did. It's literally it's a perfect summer movie. If you're going to go sit in the air conditioning for 2 hours and eat popcorn, as much as I love Mad Max and there's other movies coming up and stuff, but this is the movie to absolutely, and you can bring 10 kids and you can bring yourself and just sit there and get lost. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it, too. It was really fun. Now, I actually saw it on a Sunday morning, so it wasn't as packed, and it was in a smaller theater, but still really liked it. And, you know, my 10-year-old absolutely loved it. She thought it was, like, one of the best movies she's ever seen.
Yeah.
Because she's now just starting to see PG-13 movies, and she thought it was
did
amazing.
You bring your 10-year-old?
Yes.
I thought you said a 10-year-old. I'm like, well, seems like an odd thing for you on a Sunday, but good for you.
Well, they rent them at the theater. she absolutely loved it. And I'll tell you, one of the things I really liked is, like, they knew the hole they were in to begin with. It's like, all right, we've seen a bunch of these movies.
Yeah, how
are
we
going to make
this?
It different? How are we going to make it a little more interesting? And how are we going to even do, like, a wink and a nod to what we've already done and the problem that we actually have creating this movie?
Yeah.
And one of the things I loved was the way the movie was set up with the theme park already existing for a while, where people are already starting to get bored with it. Like, everyone, you know,
that
all the kids are kind of bored with dinosaurs. But I also like just the production design of, if you had a dinosaur theme park, this is what it would look like. You would have the trams and the
rides. It would be SeaWorld.
I tell you, watching it in my head, I go, how does this not exist yet? Other than the dinosaurs, but literally just the park experience, the holograms and the gyroscope, the gyro balls. And I'm like, dude, how have you not made this happen?
It literally looked like they took, you know, because it's Universal. It literally looked like they took some of the park people that work on the park and like, well, how would you make?
It
really felt like that.
I wouldn't doubt that.
Like the layers and the tiers, because you always have like the buildings with different shapes. In the middle, you've got the one that's like the big pyramid. I thought it was really a cool attention to detail of like what the park would actually look like.
Agreed.
And when it was funny. It's like you expect certain things in the summer movie. I have to say, I was not on board with this movie when the trailers first started coming out. I'm like, this is a rehash. They're not going to show me anything new. I'm going to be completely bored. I'm not interested in this movie. And then as more and more trailers came out, it looked like it was going to do something a little bit different, but not too different. It's still freaking dinosaurs getting out of a park and eating people. It hit that sweet spot of like what you expected and trying to do some things a little bit differently. Now, there were some really, I will say there were some really, really dumb parts in the movie, but here's the thing.
We're saving those for the spoiler?
Yes, when we were going to keep these for the spoiler, but here's the thing. It's overall the movie... was so well put together and so charming and knew that what it was as far as a summer
tentpole
movie. You can forgive those things.
You know what I mean? Because here's the thing
there's a couple that I almost couldn't, but we'll get into those.
Here's the thing you can't forgive is if there wouldn't have been a bunch of amazing dinosaur action and people talking and having a relationship fight or whatever, then I would be like...
Like if you didn't see... If it was all about the one dinosaur and you didn't see him till the end, would have been furious.
Yes.
Would have been absolutely furious.
It would have been Godzilla.
Yeah, yeah. And it was the kind of thing where like, oh no, I got to see the evil main dinosaur killing machine right away. And I also got to see all the other dinosaurs and the interaction and all that stuff. And it was really well put together, especially that third act. It wasn't like, all right, one dinosaur, them running from one dinosaur. It was a bunch of dinosaurs. It was some cool things. It was some great choreography, some cool fighting. And it was... it was just really fun. It was a fun summer movie. And I will say, people, you have to manage your expectations a little bit on this movie. You're not going to get a great, amazing script. You're going to get dinosaur action, and you're going to get it framed under a serviceable, mostly serviceable script. I mean, it's certainly not the worst one.
There's going to be moments where you look at it and go, come on. But it doesn't matter, because then you also have to go, oh, wait a minute, there's like 90 dinosaurs having a fight. Yeah, what the fuck am I concerned
and,
about?
you know what I mean? There's a couple like details here and there. And I'm like, well, I wish they would have kind of cleaned that up a little bit. But again, they got all the big parts, the important parts right. Yeah. And I'll tell you, Chris Pratt is so charming and engaging. Like, even when like his character is not fully fleshed out, you still love watching him.
Yeah, I mean, there's those moments... And I'm curious to talk, because I got an email from Steele Saunders, who does Green Guide Letters and, and Steel Wars podcast, who's been on the show, and he hated it.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard that too. I've seen it on Twitter and Facebook. Our fans are really splitting on it. Some people have been loving it, really enjoying it, and other people have been like, this is the worst. It's just like a bunch of dinosaur bullshit. And you know what? This is one of the movies that baffles me a little bit, that people would have such strong reactions either way. Like, I really feel like this is a summer movie. It's got dinosaurs in it. I really feel like the strongest negative reaction you could have is like, well, that was just boring and I've seen it before.
Yeah.
Not like to really get angry about like a big Jurassic Park dinosaur movie.
I will tell you that when we saw it, again, packed house, behind us, full row of ironic watching hipster types all together as a group. There's like nine of them.
Well, they travel in
packs.
How
many beards? Yeah. How many beards?
Three beards and two of them ladies.
But how many ski caps?
Oh, Christ. I couldn't even tell you. I wish they would have pulled them down over their eyes, though, because throughout the film, just a lot of giggling and a lot of like hating, like verbally not liking it.
Oh, right.
And like that laughing and just going, come on, this is stupid. But sat there and watched the entire fucking film. And here's my favorite part of the whole thing. At the end of it, there's a group of like 10 of them. And they're all just like, oh, God. Oh, so they're like groaning. And one of their friends just goes, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
And they'll go, you did? Like they, and I'm like, good for you, motherfucker. Yeah. Stand up.
Skull cap off to you.
Yeah. Exactly. You and your PBR are my best friend, God damn it.
You're not going to be following the other lemmings off the cliff.
It was crazy because, again, they all just shit on it collectively. Right. And I'm just like, what did you expect it to be? Because, again, they're groaning at the parts that are kind of groanable, and I get that. Yes. But you don't have to announce to an entire theater, oh, we are better than this, and we get that this is, you know what I mean? It's so stupid.
Don't be there.
It's a roller coaster. And you know when you get on a roller coaster and those ones that weave you through and there's like some dumb story you got to follow?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And just like, well, welcome to the thing. And then you're in space camp. And then, I'm sure that asteroid field won't cause us any problems. And you're like, okay, well, that's now we
it's
know.
It's like Pirates of the Caribbean when you start off in the swamp and then you go down the waterfall.
Right. It's like when you're going through that thing, you're like, oh, this is so poorly written and this character isn't developed, whatever. Like, no, it's a dumb roller coaster ride.
Yeah. You got to really go into this knowing that every human character is bait. That's all they are. Every human character
is a dinosaur
bait.
Sandwich. That's all they are.
Bait.
So
that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah,
they're two dimensional.
Their job is to either run away from a dinosaur or try to kill one. That's it.
Yeah.
Or get eaten.
Those
are your choices. So the fact that your character isn't that fleshed out and some of your dialogue is annoying, don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You can really. I want you to either fight it
or eat it or get eaten.
Yeah. So, and this is one where you really have to go in with either I'm going to be forgiving or if my guard's up, there's no way I'm going to like it. So that's the kind of thing. If you're already in that mindset of like, this is going to be dumb, there's nothing that's going to change your mind.
No.
You're going to really think, this was dumb. I don't know why I watched it.
Yeah.
So, but if you're there, I'm like, all right, it's a big summer blockbuster movie. I'm going to expect dumb dialogue, ridiculous character motivation.
Oh, yeah.
And, but I just really am here for the dinosaurs. Then you won't be disappointed.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was summer in 2 hours. It was literally just a popcorn movie and it breezes by and then it's just over and you're like, whoa, that was over.
I literally, my physical reaction after the movie was over was that of after the crazy roller coaster and you just did the corkscrews and the crazy shit, right, and you're like, oh, remember we taught that turn and you felt, right, like your face was going to go right into that wall and it doesn't. And yeah, was all, yeah, like that's, mm-hmm, that's, I, we just, and then, you know, you coast in that last 100 mm-hmm yards. Mm-hmm. That's where I was sitting in my chair going, wow, yeah, that was right on. Right.
And one thing I really like too is like kind of like they left the little Easter eggs and the homages to the first movie.
That, yeah, was great.
And, you know, one actor that was in the movie was in this one. That was it. It was just one. It was the scientist that was actually developing.
And my whole theater clapped.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Literally, he showed up. They all clapped. Oh, that's, it was just great. Like, that was, yeah, yeah, the row behind me. They're like, the Law and Order idiot.
Yeah, and what's funny is in the original movie, he's like in one scene.
Yeah, yeah, that's, you know, why. So
we'll get into all this in the spoiler.
So clearly, he must have gotten to the boat in the first movie.
So boat, not bait.
Yeah,
boat,
yeah,
not, he was bait. Boat, not hashtag bait. Boat, not bait. All right. Well, the other movie I saw this weekend was the Brian Wilson story, Love and Mercy. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
let me just go ahead and clarify. Brian Wilson, Beach Boy, not Brian Wilson, San Francisco Giants world champion closer.
Or both.
Yeah, it's both their stories.
Is it?
It's
a parallel. That's not a bad movie. Honestly, I'd go see that movie. If you contrast and compare stupid bearded closer with fucking crazy lumpy keyboard player. Probably I should probably call him a genius as well.
Make a split screen.
No, just lumpy. Yeah. Just
yeah. Lumpy keyboard player. Yeah. That's who Brian Wilson is. I guess three words to describe Brian Wilson, you would go with lumpy keyboard player. Hang me.
So yeah, it was directed by Bill Pohlad. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he was a producer on 12 Years a Slave, Tree of Life, Wild. So he's done a lot of producing. Hasn't really done much directing.
Now, 12 Years a Slave, that was actually the first Brian Wilson documentary, if I remember correctly. Yeah, yeah. Written from the point of view of Brian himself about his father.
Yeah, great. He's done some documentaries. So this movie is interesting because it shows not modern day Brian Wilson, but Brian Wilson in like late 80s, 90s, played by John Cusack.
Okay.
And then young Brian Wilson, played by Paul Dano.
Now, first of all, how does Paul Dano make Brian Wilson not look creepy?
Well, here's what they focus on. And this, I don't know. I like the Beach Boys. I'm not a huge fan. I don't know that much about, or did not know that much about Brian Wilson's actual story going into this film. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he suffered from like a type of like schizophrenia or something like that. So
was that onset or did he always have it? See, because I really don't know anything about him. I know he went fucking bananas, mm-hmm, and then he came back.
I think.
And didn't he live with a guru and all that nonsense?
That was part of the movie, is Paul, okay, Giamatti plays this, this like manager attorney guy that the movie starts. And you're like, oh, is he really looking out for Brian, or is he not someone? I won't spoil it, but, or is he someone you can't? I mean, I guess if you know his true life story, you know.
Yeah.
But so there is that, and they skip some years, so they're basically, they bring you up to speed very quickly. Well, you meet Paul Cusack or John Cusack. You meet John Cusack, and you're like, oh wow, how did he get to this place? And then they kind of bring you up to speed in the 60s very quickly. Like they started this, you know, bunch of brothers and cousins and got their band together. And then all of a sudden they kind of bring you to like, whatever, I think it's like 67, 68 when they're like at their peak,
right?
The Beatles are at their peak and Brian goes, and I don't want to go on the road anymore. Let me stay in the studio. I'm going to try and experiment with some stuff. And the guys are like, okay. And then they spend a lot of time cutting back and forth between Cusack in the late 80s, early 90s, and then Paul in the studio making like Pet Sounds, that album, which was like revolutionary.
Brilliant, brilliant album.
Brilliant.
Ridiculous.
Album.
It was one of those things where I always heard about that. And to me, the Beach Boys were always like, can. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. And then I bought Pet Sounds and I was like, holy God. Well, the outtakes on Pet Sounds are worth buying. Just to hear their vocal tracks as they're laying them down, you're like, oh my Christ, so amazing.
And this is the thing I give the director a lot of credit for. And they after the movie, we saw it at an Arclight, which is one of the things I like about Arclight. They showed
the little extra
at the end of the movie where they did a one-on-one interview with the director. And one of the things they did was...
That's Bill Pohlad.
Bill Pohlad. They hire session musicians. Mm-hmm. They went in the actual studio where Pet Sounds was made. And Paul Dano, who played a kind of a mad genius, which is what Brian Wilson won. You know, he was battling serious mental illness, and his obsessive brain is how he was like, I can hear all these sounds and coming up with, I want to do this, and all this experimenting crazy shit that Brian Wilson did using bobby pins on the inside of a piano string to create all this stuff and doing all these tracks. And what the director said, and this really made me like the movie even more, hired these musicians. Paul Dano did all this research on Brian Wilson and how Pet Sounds was made, and then went, okay, go. And just let Paul Dano be crazy Brian Wilson in the studio going, let's try this, let's try that. And these session musicians going, okay, brother, you know, and, wow. And that was really awesome. And then there's this great scene with one of the session, with one of the musicians, who is also a decent actor, I guess, who goes, you know, they're taking a smoke break or whatever. And he goes, hey man, we're all pros. We've all worked with everybody, Sam Cooke, Elvis, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And I got to tell you, man, you're blowing us away. And it was just like, and everyone's like, what are you doing? The guys come back from the road, and one of the guys in the band is like, what is this? We got to go back to what we do.
Can't. Yeah.
It's so funny you say that, because then Dano goes, look, I can't do another song about the fun and the summer and the summer and the fun. I can't do it. Like, he just lists off all that can stuff. And bing, ging, 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 ging.
Exactly.
Like, I can't do that anymore.
I'm not happy anymore.
Yeah.
I can't do fucking happy.
Yes.
That's gorgeous.
And he basically, and there's, and then, and that, that's sort of a fight. And there's another scene where they're, he goes, none of us even surf. Real surfers don't even... And then he says, real surfers don't even...
Sing.
Don't even listen to us.
Yeah.
Which is, like, kind of true if you know, it was...
Yeah, you're selling surf culture to
the Midwest.
Who don't understand what it is.
Right.
They just think it's sun and sand and the beach, and they don't get it. Yeah.
And real surfers were like, no way, man. Like Mickey Dora, there's a great book about him, who is this like hardcore Malibu surfer, and he was just like, oh, that fucking Beach Boys shit. They were like, when Gidget, they always talk about in several surf documentaries, there's...
Well, Frankie Avalon, all those movies, those beach movies.
They hate them. Mm-hmm. They talk about pre-Gidget and post-Gidget.
How do they feel about Batman versus the Joker in their surfing their surfing contest?
That's the thing.
Loved it.
All the surfers are just like, man, if we have to watch that fucking shit one more time with these greens, rear projection back then. Yeah.
And that Funicello,
yes,
all of those movies.
All those movies, mm-hmm. And they're like, the Beach Boys got lumped into that culture. Mm-hmm. So here's Paul Dano going, why are we... You know, we did that.
Yeah.
Did anybody in the band go, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it?
No, there was one guy. This one, his cousin was like, dude. And then they
got
showed
a good thing going.
What
here.
Are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, let's just fucking beach summer fun and have another gold record. Mm-hmm. And their dad, like, I didn't know this. Brian Wilson's dad was an asshole.
Yes.
And they talk about that. Look, hey, man, dad's not beating us anymore. We don't have to do what he says. And he was their manager. And then his dad comes in and is a dick, and he goes, listen to this new band I signed, and it's bing, 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 beach fun, fun, fun. Paul Dano's just like, good for you, Dad. I'm not doing that. And so, and then they go back to...
Then he grabbed a paper clip and he dove into a harpsichord. For 7 hours.
Brilliant.
But now, I have a question, because they have... normally, this doesn't happen. You have two actors playing the same character. Like, could you have just done Paul Dano and then aged him for the other scenes? Like, what was the advantage of using two actors for this bio?
Here's what I think the advantage was. And
the Advano? You could have said that.
The
Paul Advano?
The Avanozac. I'm going to combine.
Oh.
You like that?
Nice, new word. Yeah.
Hashtag Avanozac. What had happened was Brian Wilson then started really, like, hearing voices and really...
He deteriorated
and going nuts. And so there was a 3-year period where he didn't leave his bed. And
that's not an exaggeration.
That's actually real. That's what happened. So to me, it's like, I think there was just this lost period of time. And he then...
he got into a cocoon and transformed into another actor.
Honestly, I think that's what the director looked at and said. Uh-huh. He came out of that period and
completely different.
And then they pumped him full of drugs. Mm-hmm. And then Paul Giamatti, who's a great, plays a great asshole. He's such a good actor. And when he plays a guy that's yelling at you, he fucking... it's awesome. And then... Elizabeth Banks. I mean, this is all real happening. He meets Elizabeth Banks, who is now his wife. And so I think it was smart because the director went, here's genius Brian Wilson, and then here's collapsed, life is in shambles, drug addict, all this, divorced, estranged from his kids, like completely. And then people took advantage of that. And drugged him up and got him to sign things and all this stuff. So it felt like you needed to have two different actors.
Interesting. Okay.
Because you're right. You could have just aged up Paul Dano. Mm-hmm. But I think you needed a guy that was just out of it, who Elizabeth Banks meets 20-some years after the Beach Boys were big. No one was listening to Beach Boys music in 1989.
Right.
They hadn't released any. I mean, they were done. And so...
It's so weird that you would, because I literally think that's when Kokomo came out.
Right.
I'm not even joking. Like yeah. that's it's funny you would just choose that year, because literally, yes, they were actually. That was because Cocktail came out in 89 and Kokomo was on the soundtrack, and that's what brought them back. So it's such a weird, arbitrary year to pick.
You're right. I guess, yeah.
It made me laugh.
But when that came out, me personally, I guess I'm just going for my own thing.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? I was like, I'm not listening to Kokomo. I don't know what the
absolutely.
Fuck
I just you think it was, I mean? Such an, oh, it's such an odd year to that choose. That's because they came back from the grave that year
the
and then
year.
Started touring summers and playing, you know, all doing bullshit.
Wasn't Wilson Phillips was their daughters, right?
John Phillips from the Mamas and the Papas is one of them. And then Carney Wilson is actually the daughter of one of the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
I believe.
Might be one of his brothers. Mm-hmm. But they don't go into really any of that. They really.
But Chyna Phillips is John Phillips' daughter, I believe, from Mamas and the Papas.
So maybe this time frame is before Kokomo came out.
Well, but you're not wrong. I mean, Brian Wilson wasn't affiliated with Kokomo. That's when Mike Love basically said, we are a cottage industry and we're going to go out and sell the beach again to everybody and make a ton of fucking money and not care. You know what I mean? So it's not like that was Brian Wilson's Beach Boys who did Kokomo. Brian Wilson was estranged from them and that he wasn't there.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Because then...
Because they certainly tried to...
they buffetized themselves.
Well, basically, and they also felt like, however Brian Wilson sounded like, this is with him in the band, we're going to create that exact same thing again for Kokomo.
Well, that was the interesting thing. He was estranged from everybody at that point. And that's the whole Elizabeth Banks. My one complaint with this story is once it kind of became clear what Elizabeth Banks... like her role, when once she became like, oh, I gotta like help this guy now, and I'm gonna really try to help him legally and everything else. They kept cutting back to just showing more of Paul Dano deteriorating, and it was like, okay, I think they should have just trimmed some of that out and just gone, show me Paul Dano, who he is, why he was a genius, Pet Sounds, and him deteriorating, and then let's just get us to the present day of how Elizabeth Banks' character came in and rescued him, and now they're happily married. Like just. That's my only complaint. It's just a little long. You could have cut 10, 15 minutes out of it that way. But for the most part, I don't know. It was interesting, and it was interesting watching two different actors play this guy.
So it worked for you.
It did for me. Maybe it did for other people. I don't know. Maybe
how good is Cusack in it?
I think he's really good.
I love him. And I think this is a great contrast because we have Jurassic World, which is literally you need 10,000 people with computers to build what we saw.
Right, yes, right. Yeah, easily. Right. And over the span of 2 to 3 years.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you find a niche film, which I'm going to call it, because I'm just assuming it's that. And Dano, Giamatti, Cusack, Banks, heavy hitters right
Big
there,
hitter,
in my
hitter.
Opinion.
Yeah.
Certainly for acting chops and talent. And it shows that there's room for everything, man.
Right.
It just shows you can do it all within the construct of film. You can make a ridiculous summer blockbuster, and you can make a small film about a personal story, and it all fucking works.
Yeah, well, the difference is John Cusack won't be on a Burger King cup.
Yeah. But I mean, you could have put Giamatti in any of those roles, several of those roles in
Jurassic World.
Jurassic World. So, of course.
Well, he's in San Andreas.
Yeah, yeah, great. He's in San Andreas doing that exact same thing. Like, it's going to blow. You know what I mean? Great.
But it shows that there's room for spectacle and there's room for story. And there's room for gigantic dinosaurs biting people, and there's room for a guy who didn't get out of bed for 3 fucking years but is a genius. You know what I mean? It's, and there's interest in that story.
Yeah.
There's interest in your fucking leaf blower outside. I mean, literally, if you find it, if you're a filmmaker and you care enough, you will find it and you will make somebody care. It's brilliant.
It's great. And it shows like, and one of the things too in the interview thing after the movie that the director said, he goes, you know, we want to shed some light on mental illness, which is a big topic, you know, and it's something we're talking about with earbuds.
Absolutely.
Because we've got a lot of people in our interviews and earbuds who were like, it helped me get through this. I mean, you know this, Mike, as a podcast, you've gotten emails, I'm sure, from like, your podcast helped me get through this difficult,
you know, your podcast sent me over the edge.
Yeah.
That happens as well. Yeah, certainly.
You're the problem.
Like, I also got one to say, you're a podcaster? Yeah. I get those a lot. I love the fact that there are stories to be told. And you just have to find them. And you have to find them.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the filmmaking, we talk about a lot on this show. It's a really great point you bring up, is filmmaking is storytelling. And just because, I mean, you can have a little small film, but I mean, like you say, these amazing actors, this is an A-list producer that directed it. I mean, he's produced and been involved with like Oscar movies.
And because of that, someone said, all right, we will let you direct. Mm-hmm. And he chose to tell this story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like he's maybe that's a passion project for him. Maybe he's been waiting for his opportunity to do it. He's been plugging away doing his producing thing. And he went, I think I can actually direct. And here's the story I want to tell. And he surrounded himself with A-list, in maybe not monetarily A-list, but certainly talent-wise A-list talent.
Well, Dan O.G. and Giamatti are in Oscar-nominated movies all the
time. Well, sure.
I mean, that's
their Cusack talent. Was nominated for Max, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. And Cusack and Banks are just talent-wise. I mean, she's in a lot of big movies. Cusack is a guy who I think is amazing, is very talented, but...
He's a very reserved actor.
He's a reserved actor.
Can we talk... I don't mean to be this guy. You know your iPhone extra?
Yeah.
Let's talk Cusack.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I love it, because we went to the same high school. He was graduated from Evanston Township High School.
Wild Kits?
Wild Kits. He is a Wild Kit. KITS. Kits, Kits, Kits. and he, he was the same year as my brother. And he started doing a couple movies while he was in high school. Like one of them, wasn't he a nerd in 16 Candles?
All right. So can we talk? We want to talk now, or we want to talk in the extra? Because I mean, in 16 Candles, he's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, he's literally in it, and he's Farmer Ted's one of the minions. Yeah. It's like literally the two dudes who follow Anthony Michael Hall everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And they do the air bass when they walk into the party. God damn it, Cusack's a genius.
Did you see Hot Tub Time Machine?
Well, no. And so let's talk about that as well, because I really wanted to see it, but I did not
get
a chance.
He's good in it.
He's good in everything. Well, I mean, because now I want to go at it and talk about it, but I want to wait for the fucking extra.
We'll talk about it in the extra, but it's.
I'll tell you right now, see Hot Tub Time Machine.
I have to, right? Yeah. I mean, how did I not? I'm so fucking mad at myself.
And also Elizabeth Banks, she's someone that's done a lot of, and she has some real depth in this, because she's sitting there, and the scene where they first meet, he just comes in and sits in a Cadillac, and he's, you know, John Cusack being Brian Wilson, go, oh, I really like this car. And yeah, I want to get it. She's like, well, let's talk terms. No, I just want to buy it. She doesn't know who he is. And then all of a sudden Giamatti and his handlers all come up. They're like, okay, sweetie, wrap it up. And she's like, huh? She's like, do you know who that was? She's like, what? I used to listen to your music. So she's, and you see the conflict of, this guy's off.
Yeah.
Do I want to get involved in this? And he also made music that I grew up listening to. And I am starting to care about him. You know what I mean? Like, and who's this Giamatti guy? It's her conflict in this is great. And the way she pulls it off, you know, she's this cute blonde selling Cadillacs. That's who she was. And then he literally walks into her showroom. There's some great scenes. There are great scenes between her and Giamatti. that are just because he's such a prick. And she just, her like quiet strength. Anyway.
Oh, check it out then.
It's a good movie.
So, okay. Well, one of the things we wanted to talk about too is, as your fans and my fans know, Mike, Asylum was released.
True.
Speaking of filmmakers who have a story to tell. Oh, dude.
I think it's great now that no one has to pay for it. It was on YouTube.
Yes.
And one of the, there was a thread on your Facebook page, and it was like, you know, you can see this on YouTube. And our, one of our old interns, Ben, is like, no, I need to see it in high def. He went and bought the DVD.
Ben did, yeah.
And then Heidi says, where did you find it on Amazon? I'm going to find it. And then I finally commented, stop buying this movie.
Well, if you're going to buy it through our Amazon
link. Yeah, but if you are going to buy it, yeah, buy it through our Amazon affiliate link, because that's the only way I'll see any money from it.
no, you won't see any money from it.
Yeah, but. Yeah. I don't even know if I haven't. I bought the DVD too, but I haven't even seen if like there's credits or.
Is
anything.
Is there a way we could get like hijacked copies or black market copies of this, and then you guys autograph and sell them and keep the money? Like, I think, honestly,
there must
like
be.
If I
should we
was,
burn it?
Yeah,
we could burn it and sell it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, what the fuck are they going to come after us?
No problem with that at all. It's one of those things. Like if I ever go when on the bases in Iraq and Afghanistan, in the little swap meets that they have,
mm-hmm.
There's all these bootlegged movies that right. they sell.
And I hope it's there at least.
And if it is, mm-hmm. I want to go back there just to find that.
Or if it's SWAT versus Devils of the Japanese.
Oh bootleg. Yeah, and a lot of times it's like literally the camcorder in the theater.
Sure,
right.
Burns.
Mm-hmm.
I would buy it.
I don't deserve a fucking dime. If anybody makes it, you make it. Like, if you want to do that plan, I'll sign whatever you want me to sign, and you should get the money. I'm not even kidding. You wrote it initially, then you got fucking burned on it, yeah. then you got brought That's in to twice. Rewrite it, and I mean, literally
burned you again.
Yeah, I showed up and jerked off and made 10 jokes and went home. I mean, so... How the fuck am I going to get paid?
Actually, you made 100 jokes, and then they took 90 out.
That's true. That's a good point.
In fact, I will say Mike was so conscientious when we were at the hotel. He stayed up half the night. He was writing jokes and alternate jokes for all these scenes because he had the raw footage. And first of all, then they couldn't even get the audio to work. So most of those were already gone. They were lost.
Now, you said half the night as if it was only half the night. I mean, you're joking. I literally went to bed at 6 a.m. because I had to be on set at 8.
Right.
So, I mean, I stayed up all night and longhand –
wrote
legal pad, writing jokes.
Wrote the jokes
just,
out.
And just churning them, watching
yeah.
and stopping after 30 seconds and writing two jokes, and then stopping after 30 and writing two,
right,
three jokes.
Right, and then...
Because that was the job.
Yeah, and we got into the booth, and we got to be able to do like one pass, and then like, well, can we do any of these others? Oh, yeah, we'll do a couple of these. That footage was lost.
Yeah.
Never got to hear any alternate takes, and then...
So yeah, you should get paid for a couple of these DVDs, Mike.
I literally filled a legal pad with jokes.
Yeah, and like, then...
the whole fucking thing, just longhand writing, and time codes and writing, because I wanted to be fucking good.
So they took out probably at least 50 to 60% of Mike's jokes. So now you have these deep, long, empty silences in the movie where you're just watching an unwatchable horror film.
And my favorite part of the conceit is that me and the other editor are watching it,
right,
and making jokes as it goes on.
Yeah.
That makes it look like we're engrossed for that
right.
amount of time.
Yeah.
And we couldn't think of jokes. No, there were tons of jokes vomited all over that movie. They just
so
disappeared.
Insane. Yeah. One of my favorite ones that we took out when they have that boiler scene, and it's like, what is this, Metropolis?
Yeah.
And then you went, oh, Fritz Lang just turned over in his grave because I mentioned his film during this film.
Yeah.
That's a great joke.
Yeah. Yeah. And we, but that was the level we, you know, because it was shit. We were given shit to
yes,
work with. You
sure.
know, they always say turn shit into mm-hmm. chicken salad or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to make fucking steak out of shit, and we both did. You know, that was the whole deal. So you always, as you know, you write at the top of your intelligence, and I wanted to just fucking grind this film under my boot with as much funny as I possibly could.
Yep.
So I wrote and wrote and wrote and just fucking, I mean, it was just, that's what we did. It was because I wanted it to be fucking great. And I'll tell you, I was scared to fucking death the first day because we showed up and I met all of these wannabe nonsense,
horrible
fucking
people.
Bad
horrible,
producer.
Yeah.
Literally, I, like sitting as close as we are now, talking to one another on cell phones, like that kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm in the business. Bring, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just shut the fuck
basically
up.
Talking to a dial tone.
Hold on, I'm in the business.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have a high level show business digital
and
cell phone call.
Yeah. What
there's
the
a poster of a pirate zombie on the wall.
Yeah.
I'm like, good for you. You guys are champions of the industry.
One of the things we noticed too, like, is when it started, like the crew was a little standoffish. Like, they were like, oh, who's this guy coming in and starting to shoot? And then after about 2 hours, they all kind of came up to us, you know, this is really funny. And then I pretty much won them over, and they had our backs for the entire shoot.
Right.
And then they were like, you know, these producers are out of their minds. I'm like, I know. Just try to get it.
They were just fatheads. That terrible fucking...
They were worried about Mike's shirt in the last scene, what he had on. And I'm like, it's not going to match the continuity. Like, no, it has to be in the... No. And I'm like, you know what? It's a shirt. If you want to change his shirt, change his shirt. It's fine. So
this idiots is, justifying their jobs.
This
exactly
is my
right.
this is yeah. my go-to story about those people. The whole time I came in to record the voiceover when we did that the first day,
yeah,
and I was nervous as fuck. We literally sat on a couch, me and the other actor. What was his name?
Right, I can't remember.
Yeah, he nice guy.
Yeah, nice guy.
Nice guy, but not
another guy,
a comedian, because it was supposed to be you.
Right, yeah, yeah,
right.
Tell everybody that because that's important. Because I thought you and I would be trading fucking bits over
which
this movie.
Been great.
Yes. Yeah. Because I would make you laugh. This guy didn't laugh at one fucking thing I said.
They literally paid. They could only pay for one hotel room, and then the only way I got Dean down there is I had to give up my rental car so they could actually pay for his hotel room.
Yeah, because they were offering me like a nickel, and I already had road gigs booked.
Yeah,
or something
yeah,
like
they're offering you like $100 or whatever.
Because when Chris pitched me, he said it was me and you, and I was that's gonna be fucking awesome because you make me laugh, I make you laugh.
We would have just sat there going. We would have woken up every morning going, this is going to be awesome.
The other thing is, why would you not shoot it in L.A.? There's a million comedians here. And they're like, oh, no, we'll just go to Baton Rouge and use an improv troupe down there. That was my best part. We used the Baton Rouge improv troupe to populate this movie.
Hey, and all of them very nice. Yeah. Again, everybody was super nice. The crew people, cast people were really nice. It was the producers that mucked it all up. So here's my favorite go-to, and I told this on my show. They cast the guy along who is my foil. Whatever, my partner, my other editor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They cast him because they knew him from college. Literally something like that. Yeah. That was the guy who was supposed to be you, Graham.
And, he was actually funny. I'd seen some other movies he was in. He would have been able to pull it off given more time time with
But not
Mike.
Like you and me. Not ping pong like you and me.
Right, right. They didn't have, there was
and
not
he
the
also was
kind
of fart, pee-pee. Like, those were a lot of his jokes, and I was just kind of like...
He wasn't a comedian.
Yeah, he wasn't a comic. So when we sat on the couch... I charitably laughed at some of his stuff, trying to get him in the mood, but he literally never laughs at anything I say because he's so nervous. He never even looked at the footage. Like, he's reading his lines. He wasn't listening. There was no giving back.
And here was my favorite critique, too, of that, as you're talking about. They said they took out a lot of the lines because they didn't want to hear people laughing.
Yeah. That's completely true.
Like, really? So you don't want to hear the editors actually enjoy the footage so the audience knows to laugh and enjoy it? So no, nobody should be laughing.
When we're recording, we're recording it dry. So we're watching the actual footage, and me and the other guy are speaking into microphones. And like I said, I'm charitably giving him back a little bit of laughter to try to get him into it.
Right.
But he laughs at nothing I say. So I'm playing to a dry room, as you know, which is death. So we go through the whole fucking take. We do an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes. And then Chris goes, all right, we're going to do your alternate stuff that you want to do. And Chris had written some stuff, too, that he wanted me to say. So I said, great. So he goes, put your cans on and we'll go. I'll give you cues on when to go. So I put the cans on and I start firing away my alternate jokes. The control room is dying. I hear everybody laughing, Chris, the producers, and I'm like, oh, it is kind of working. Because I just did 2 hours of fucking silence thinking this is going to be a death fucking march. But then they were all laughing. And so then it loosened me up. So then I'm firing away and we're really killing it. And again, he's like, none of that is going to get in probably. And it didn't. But again, I have to let me tell this. So this dude is a guy they cast. He's an improv group guy and he was a nice kid, but he's not us.
Right.
So during a downtime of shooting, I hear the producers go up to him and they go, hey, look, you know what? We want you to just kind of wing it, man. Just say whatever you want. Ooh. And he goes, really? And they go, yeah, just improvise. And you know that thing, you know, because they saw Dean do it. So they thought it was easy.
Right.
So they saw Dean improvise with me and they went, oh yeah, that's cool. So they, instead of coming to me, they go to that dude and they go, say whatever you want. We think it's going to be really funny and do whatever you want to do and just doesn't matter. Just fucking throw whatever you want out there. And the guy's like, okay. They come to me and I'm like, all right, well, cool. I've been waiting for this. Take the fucking leash off. They come up to me and they go, we just want to warn you. We told Mark, whatever the fuck his name was, we told him to kind of improvise. He can say whatever he wants. So be prepared. And, you know, it's okay if you laugh at his stuff, but we didn't want you to freeze up. We wanted you to be right there. So if he says something, if you can't think of anything, just kind of roll with it and let him fill it up. And I went, I think I can handle that. So I'm not kidding. We go in to shoot. We're sitting there and they take 45 minutes to pick a shirt for me.
Yeah.
We sit down in front of the monitor and Chris is just like, all right, well, here's what we're going to do. And they go, they're like, action. and I'm not kidding, I vomit laugh rage all over this guy. Like he starts to improvise a little bit, and I just literally, he gave me the baton and I Carl Lewis'd into the fucking distance. And to the way, he's just like staring at me, like, cause he has no idea what to fucking say, but it doesn't matter. Cause I am just
steamrolled.
It's a fuselage. I'm just fucking, I am just dominating. And I didn't want to, but I just wanted to show them I have this. It's fine.
Right.
But they told him to do whatever he wanted, and they warned me to be prepared. I've been doing this 20 years. Oh, I'm okay. Great. Thank you. I hope your little improv buddy from Baton Rouge can fucking not steamroll me in front of everybody.
It's like, I will say this just because I want to mention it. It'd be like the new 2015 Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks.
Oh, certainly.
You had a couple of them for your ice skating movie, and you go, hey, fellas, there's a guy that I rollerbladed with in eighth grade. He doesn't rollerblade professionally, but if he gets a hold of the puck...
Yeah, just go ahead and you know, skate backwards, and he's gonna come at you kind of fast.
And even when we were shooting those shots in the editing room, they're like, "Well, we need close-ups." I'm like, "No, you don't. It's a two shot with two editors playing off each other. That's all you need." And so when I said no, then the producers went to the DP and they said, "Look, we really need to shoot some close-ups." And by that time, I had the crew on my side. Yeah. The DP went, "Well, only if the director wants it."
Yeah.
Nice.
But they were just, and again, they bought me a nice lunch the first day. Good for them.
Yeah.
But literally they couldn't stop talking. They had another movie called, like, you know, Buccaneer Savage that they were negotiating for.
Who knows?
You know, again, it's just this
Buccaneer Savage. Yeah.
Nothing but just horrible garbage titles that you would pick off of a Blockbuster shelf when you were bored at Friday at 9:30.
What I love,
like, and that's what they specialize in, but they pretend they're in the business.
Yeah. What I love too is like, oh, well, if Dean's saying whatever he wants, so then anybody should be able to do that. Like, oh, really, Dean, the guy with what, 30 years of experience of acting?
And this
and
is what he does when he goes on the road. Is
he creates a murder mystery out of nothing.
Right. And the whole thing about improv is that, first of all, it has to match the character. It has to match the story. It can't contradict anything else in another scene. Like, all of that was completely lost.
Well, wait a minute now. Buccaneer Savage doesn't have any of those ideas.
Oh, God, such a great release.
So I'll tell you, it was one of those...
hold on. If anyone finds a copy of Buccaneer Savage out there, man, let us know.
Hashtag it and show it to us. But it's just, anytime, now, Mike, it's probably the same for you. Anytime you tell that story, it's always like, well, I haven't heard that before. Even jaded Hollywood people have heard all these million stories. And like, well, that's the first time I've heard that one.
It's so funny. Go ahead.
The small-time people either get what they're doing, they go, look, we're making Buccaneer Savage 3.
Yeah.
We're not going to win any awards. Just come in and be the demon and fine. Or they think, look, I just negotiated $1.5 million for Buccaneer Savage. And they go, oh, wow. Like,
when we had the director...
That's what Chris Pratt... That's what his assistant got in sandwich money for Jurassic World.
Exactly. Well, they spent that to make a dinosaur wink.
Yeah. When we had the director for Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus here, and he was saying, like, he was trying to make this movie and he was trying to make it a little bit tongue-in-cheek, and literally a producer came up to him and went, this is serious business. he got dressed down for not making the movie serious.
Wannabe fuckhead.
Yeah.
Like...
When I tell people the story of the movie or even bits and pieces of it, there was always this to go. At the end of it, I always go, this is never coming out. But here was the movie. Like, I never thought it was seeing the light of day.
No.
Because the original story, I don't know how much we can get into it, but they had a deal with Lionsgate, whatever it was.
Well, no, it came out on Lionsgate.
Right. That's but that was so the thing. Crazy. But initially, they had to give, basically, they were just providing product to Lionsgate. Mm-hmm. That's it. There wasn't like Lionsgate was like, oh my God, we really need Asylum.
Right.
They were like, have you made your five movies for the year, motherfuckers? Because we funded you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's why they brought you in to try to salvage it and pick it out of the garbage and scrape the coffee grounds off of it and the eggshells and give them something salvageable. Yeah. And so
we made lemonade.
Pretend,
we made lemonade twice and they made lemons three times.
They took your lemonade and went a little too sweet.
Yeah. Hashtag lemons three times. Yeah. Jesus Christ. So I again, I will say this, the entire experience was worth it just for the fucking story, certainly.
Yeah.
And also for the one night me, you, and Dean went out.
Absolutely.
It literally was worth the trip.
I even put that on Facebook. I was like, you know, I would not trade that for anything. The fun that we had, us three, hanging out and just shooting and just having a blast and going out at night and eating and drinking, it was so much fun.
What it's about. You know what I mean? It's like when you shoot a movie in Louisiana or you go on the road, and Mike, you know this too, like you do some shitty gig at a bowling alley, but you and the other comic that night find an arcade or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
You just fucking giggle.
You just had so much fun.
So much fun.
Ate crawfish for the first time.
But a thousand of them. Right? That was the best part.
Yeah.
We literally, because I texted a picture to Jill and she was just like, oh, because now she won't ever eat them because she saw what they look like.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we just, that night, and listening to Dean tell stories about doing improv at the oil fields for the Roughnecks in Canada and regaling us with tales from the road and going by, back and forth. I mean, so fucking fun. So great. That night, again, we were out for maybe 7 hours, 8 hours. They're drinking and we're eating crawfish and we're eating fish and piles of food and just laughing and getting to the lobby and hanging out. It was the greatest. And again, even on the set was the greatest.
Yeah,
Other than the fatheads swirling around in their cell phone
but
cloud.
The crew was great. They were really fun. They were really professional. They were all great.
And the other cast were great.
The
girl from the Baton Rouge Improv group was really sweet and really nice and did a good job.
Oh, actually, one of them was a local hire we found lucky. They actually cast her, Sarah. And then the other one was a comedian from New Orleans, Jody Borella.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I worked with her.
She was the first one I called. And because they said, oh, yeah, there's plenty of people down here. I called Jody Borella and I said, I need some people, you and a couple other people. The first thing she goes is, you know, there's no one down here, right? I said, I know. They're trying to tell me there is. I know there isn't. So, but she drove up to do the shoot. And
she was great.
She was fantastic.
So anyone out
and
there...
And they cut her scene in half. So nobody knows she's a casting director. They literally start it in the middle. I'm like, well, then who? We don't even know who she is.
Who's that person?
Yeah.
But please, if there's anyone out there listening, if you can come up with some poster artwork for Buccaneer Savage, we'll put it on the Facebook page. I want to see what Buccaneer Savage looks like and who's starring in it.
Yeah. But no matter what version of Asylum you buy on DVD, whether it's the American version or SWAT versus Devil, be assured that the artwork on it will not be in the film.
It's insane.
That's After Dark's bread and butter, baby.
Bait
artwork
and switch.
That doesn't match.
Yeah, yeah. You know, horror fans are furious. And then you're seeing some of the reviews. But every once in a while, there's a review like on Amazon. Someone that bought it. Someone said, I don't know what I would just watch, but I think I kind of loved it.
We have to make Asylum.
Yes, we are going to.
Now that you have the script back.
Yes. We're going
to
make it for real.
To make it and put in all these inside jokes to this fucking SWAT versus Devil shit.
We got to have a cameo with Stephen Rea.
Oh, yeah. You got to have a cameo with Stephen Rea. We got to have Mike in there as somebody.
Yes.
Is guy in the editor. I mean, like, and Mike's character has to wear a Buccaneer Savage t-shirt.
Yeah, sure.
For the policeman's ball.
Well, but whatever scenes I'm in, I have to wear a different shirt in all of them. There has to be an argument about every single one of them. Jesus Christ.
Or maybe he works for the and you got to have a cameo as the Bulvanian attaché, cultural attaché to the fake country. Oh, all right.
Wow.
Good business.
Yes. So you can check it out. It is on YouTube right now.
Facebook page or it's on Chris's Facebook
page. Yeah, you can find it there.
Or if you're in Japan, buy SWAT versus Devil.
Oh, yeah. Devil.
All right. DVD this week, Chappie. Wow.
Did not enjoy Chappie.
Not good. Not a good movie.
Really?
Didn't like it.
Yeah.
I thought Robert Downey Jr. was great in it.
You're making a Chaplin reference. Nice.
What are we talking about?
Oh. Nice stone face.
It would have been better if he was in it.
Yeah.
Certainly.
As Chaplin for no reason. In the tramp.
He just fucking tramp walks into the goddamn robot fight. Gorgeous. Yeah. See, now I'm in. I'm totally on board with Chappie. Champlin-y? See, I don't know anything about... All right, I know what Chappie's supposed to be, okay? And I saw the trailer for it, and I was like, ooh.
Right.
But goddamn, what happened to the District 9 guy?
Like, I don't know.
I don't know.
District 9 is fantastic. It's literally revolutionary in its... You know, metaphor for the where we're losing our rights and segregation and torture, because Abu Ghraib was out at the time, and then when they're turning him into the thing, and that he's tied to the table. I almost cried during that scene. I teared up because it was so relevant to what was going on in the real world at the time.
Right.
Well, it was definitely a very personal story for him, and also based on one of his short films. I'm wondering if like this was something that he had lived with for a long time, and that's why it felt so organic.
That's why bands' first albums are so polished and good, is because they've been paying their dues and waiting and written these songs. That's why Appetite for Destruction, you know, you read the Guns N' Roses biography, you know, they're doing those songs over and over and fucking, you know, they live in a fucking storage shed. Yeah. They literally live in a storage space together, doing heroin together. And that's why they cranked out those fucking 11 songs that are brilliant. And then after that, of course, they become gigantic and they start buying gold tigers. You know what I mean? Yeah. So good for them. But that's why District 9 guy, you're just like, dude, District 9 is fucking amazing. And now every other movie that he's made is like a robot in space or Matt Damon's in a spaceship or like there's no realism.
It misses the mark.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, I forgave Elysium because I was like, oh, this just smells like the studio came in or Matt Damon's people and they forced him. Okay.
But Chappie was his movie.
But isn't that terrible that his second movie, the studio came in and pushed him around and he had to make that? I mean, it's a shame because District 9, again, I cannot stress enough. The marketing campaign caught you and then you went and saw it and you were so surprised by it.
No name actors.
Right.
I don't know what the budget was not a lot of money.
I think it was around 40. It wasn't huge.
Boy, that's even high in my estimate. Like I didn't think it was that. But
still, I mean it you know, most sci-fi movies like that are, I mean, I'm sure Elysium had $150 million budget. Yeah.
That for sure.
Yeah, because you've got bloated producer salaries and studio overhead and all that
$50 million dollars in CG costs or whatever.
And one of the reasons it got made, which is so ironic, is because the Halo movie died at that time. He was Peter Jackson and Blomkamp, the director. They were all ready to make the Halo movie, and it died. And then they were like, well, why don't we just make your short film into a feature? And that's how it was born.
Wow. Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, I really...
It's
again,
amazing.
It's a classic movie. I mean, it's...
Classic science fiction,
so
for sure.
So brilliant.
And it will always be. It's one of those movies that's... It's like Planet of the Apes. What Planet of the Apes social commentary was 40 years ago, you still watch and go, wow.
Yeah, it hits hard.
Oh, man.
And that's how District 9 is. That again, that whole scene where he's being converted, and it's just such a metaphor for the torture that was going on at the time and the segregation, and it's just, it's absolute brilliance. And now he's got a fucking tap dancing robot.
Chappie,
I mean, Christ.
It's really bad. It's a bad movie. It's bad. Elysium is like, misses the mark. Okay. Chappie is a bad film. Like, I don't know. If you want to watch it just as in a case study of like, oh, this is what John Singleton disease looks like. it's.
Can I tell my John Singleton story really fast?
Yes.
Sure.
I was bouncing at the House of Blues and John Singleton showed up and I will just tell you, I was told not to talk to him. Because I was also told he does not care for white people. That was literally, it was the other like black security guard dudes who were like, don't even. So we were outside and he comes out and he's talking, he's being friendly. He's talking to all those dudes. And he was remaking Shaft at the time. And so they were asking him, they're like, hey, what's going on? He's like, I'm about to start work on Shaft in like 2 weeks. And I looked at him and I go, you know what, John, I heard that Shaft is a bad mother. And he goes, take care, fellas. And he walks off. Totally, literally, it's my favorite. I go, you know what? I heard that Shaft is a bad mother. Take care, fellas. Like, and just, like, didn't even. I ended the conversation. He left the House of Blues by trying to be fun. And literally, all the other security guards looking at me just like, way to go, Schmidt. Way to go, 454. I'm like, oh, God damn it.
We told you.
Yeah.
We told you.
You don't have to talk to
him. Keep it shut, Whitey.
It was great.
Are they calling you 54 because of car 54?
No, idiot. Yeah. A lot of black security guards watching old Fred Gwynn sitcom. Just because it was in black and white doesn't mean blacks and whites watched it. Yeah, that's their reference, you fucking nerd.
Hey, Car 54.
Yeah, nice going, Car 54.
I think that was Fred Gwynn's best work.
454, sadly, was my...
big block.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's an engine thing. Never stops running. But Fred Gwynn never stopped either.
No, he did not.
Car 54, where are you, Mike? That's what I'm asking on the comms.
Did you say Utes?
All right, and the other one is Run All Night on DVD. Now, you saw this one, right?
I guess
on a
I
plane.
Did. Yeah,
it's a Liam Neeson movie where he has to run all night.
Oh yeah, I did see this. Yeah, it's Liam Neeson
on the list. That's on here. Run All Night. I thought that was the directions if you watched Chappie.
Yes.
If someone asked you to watch Chappie, you were to run all night.
Well, yes. If someone asked you to watch Chappie, get this Liam Neeson movie and watch him. You know, it's Liam Neeson. You know, whiskey and guns and fighting people and whatever. It's just I keep making these, Liam.
Why not?
Keep making them. I'm fine. Just keep doing this, guy. I want you to be 85 years old going, I've got a certain set of skills, you know, whatever. Just as a pirate or whatever. I don't care. Like, if he was in Chappie, Liam Neeson is the star of Buccaneer 7.
He certainly should be, right?
Get on your goddamn cell phone.
How does it not happen?
All right. Somebody create that artwork. Buccaneer Savage starring Liam Neeson.
We just signed him. I got a particular set of skills.
He's got a cutlass.
Well, now so. We just signed Liam Neeson to Buccaneer Savage. That movie will make money.
Yeah, truly.
Yes. All right. So,
and we have the site spotlight. CJ Johnson has been doing a review blitz lately, yeah. Even more than Neil. There's a ton of reviews from CJ right now, and some contrary to what we're talking about, and mm-hmm. some agreeing. And also, the message boards are getting more active. But one thing I want to mention about the site, we're still having a little trouble with commenting on the actual articles. You can comment on them, but the text color is still the same as the background color, so no one can read them yet. So we are working on fixing that.
That's
but you can comment, but you may have to wait another couple days before other people would actually see your comments. But they do work, sort of.
Thank you for all your guys' comments on the message.
And I will say, too, I want to thank you guys, too. We really appreciate you guys kind of QAing things when they don't work and letting us know, because we don't have a team of people that can go around and kind of poke the corners and, you know, kick the tires. No, so.
We got two guys in a hot garage.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's somewhere in the valley, and we got to turn the air off during the recording.
And we're filling Thrilling Adventure Hour DVD orders, so we don't have time to go
God bless
and do
those
everything.
Fans.
So basically, when you do see something wrong with the site or something's not working, we really appreciate you guys emailing us, and it'll help us get fixed quicker.
All right.
And coming out this week, Inside Out, I'm very excited to see this new Pixar movie. The whole family is. We're gonna go this weekend to see all it, right. And maybe we'll do a spoiler rep.
Oh, really?
Inside Out. Yeah,
so
you're
making me going to have to go see it.
I might. Yeah. I'm going to go maybe.
All right. I'll see it.
And the next one movie that's coming out this weekend is Manglehorn. And this is great. You can actually see which scripts Al Pacino is randomly picking.
There's an app for it, actually.
Yeah. which script will Al Pacino?
Dial Pacino script?
Yeah.
Hoorah!
Well, maybe he'll be the bad guy in Buccaneer Savage.
Oh, I got a set of skills!
Al Pacino just has like a big screening room in his house, but it's not a film screening. It's actually the old Joker's Wild set, and he just pulls a lever. And once he hits 2 out of 3, he goes and makes that movie.
Joker, Sports and Games.
Scarface 2, Manglehorn!
All right. Hoo-ha!
Looks like Manglehorn with a great ass!
I think that's our second guest to do a Pacino impression.
Really? Who's the first?
Well, it's got to be Kevin Pollak.
Kevin Pollak. Yeah. You kidding me?
All right. So he did one, and I fucking yelled, basically. Yeah. He literally brought some craft and some talent to it, and I screamed great ass at the top of my lungs.
That's what got you the role in Buccaneer Savage, friend.
Yeah, certainly.
That's the audition.
All right.
All right.
So
that's our episode. We got a lot of work to do.
We do. We want to thank everyone for buying Thrilling Adventure Hour DVDs. We will be getting those out as soon as possible. We've gone through how many have we shipped so far?
700.
Something like 700 DVDs we've sent out.
Which has been great.
We have.
And also we're setting up a screening tour of Earbuds in the fall. Don't have any definitive dates, but we're tentatively doing Australia early to mid October.
That's what it's looking like. Yeah,
We're looking at Sydney, Melbourne, and I'm going to probably be doing some stand up in Adelaide. So we might be able to set up a screening there. CJ Johnson is helping us find some cool little indie theaters to actually screen it in Sydney in a theater. Melbourne might be more in like a comedy club venue, and we're hoping to screen and do podcast recordings.
It'll be great. Yeah, yeah.
So we're working
and we'll
on that.
We'll have some special guests.
Oh, yeah, we will have some special guests. So we're working on that, guys. And then we're working on Tokyo the end of October, and then going into Hong Kong and China and all that in November.
And we do want to say we will not be in Texas next month. This didn't work out. No to podcast movement. We will not be there. It didn't work out. So come to the...
Something happened in their end.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't us. So anyway, check us out at the podcast festival. Make sure you come to that in September, 18 to 20. That's we will be there. And also, we have a lot of other stuff going on in the store. We're going to be adding Jackie Cation's comedy special. You can you'll be able to get that as a digital download very soon, probably within the next week or so. And we want to thank everyone for supporting the store, because this has really been helping us out. It's actually been helping pay earbuds bills, especially the Post.
Yep.
So the fact that, you know, you guys are buying stuff in the store, it is helping tremendously, especially if you're getting a Comedy Film Nerds book, and you've got the Thrilling Adventure Hour DVDs. We've got lots of cool T-shirts. And since Mike is in the studio right now, the next 10 people who buy the Comedy Film Nerds book will get the Mike Schmidt signature on it.
Oh, look at that. That's right.
So, and Mike, of course, wrote a great chapter on superhero movies and a great chapter on sports movies.
Thank you.
So check it out. I think that's our episode. Oh, yeah. Minneapolis. I will be headlining Deep Inside of You this weekend at the Comedy Corner Underground. This is June 19 and 21 show, Friday to Saturday, with the very funny local comic Andy Erickson. So check that out. It's a small venue, so tickets are going fast.
Can I plug me?
Yeah.
Real quick.
Mm-hmm. Mike Schmidt, what do you got going on?
Well, nothing.
What's coming up?
Well, you know, if you go to MikeSchmidtComedy.com, of course, there's all sorts of cool stuff there, and I got a Joe Business page where you can go buy stuff.
There's the link to Asylum.
Certainly. Go to my, I have an Amazon link. Don't use that. Mine, use theirs.
And then, Buccaneer Savage Kickstarter page.
Right there soon. It's more of a GoFundMe. I want to use whatever I get. I don't want to try to forfeit it. 40-Year-Old Boy podcast, of course, available on iTunes. And I will be in Pittsburgh at the Maker Theater on August 1st.
Nice.
Saturday night, August 1st. That's a night with me and storytelling and comedy.
Is it like
hybrid.
A 40-year-old boy live?
Yeah. It's called.
Oh, it's just, you'll record and release it?
No, that I will not. I mean, because it's the first show of hopefully many. I have other cities that I'm talking to. It's just I got to find venues and all that kind of thing. But right now, for sure, Pittsburgh is happening August 1st. Show's at 8 o'clock at the Maker Theater. And tickets are available through brownpapertickets.com. Google me or Google, you know, 40-year-old boy, or put it in Brown Paper Tickets. And you will find my name and buy tickets. Come out and see me.
It's a great show, guys, to watch Mike live. And Pittsburgh, I've done some great shows there. I really like that.
This is my first time.
Oh, it's a blast.
Good.
And if
I'm
you
excited.
Can, if you got time, go to a Bucks game. Go to.
They're not in town. Why not? I'll just say it. It's a whole week. I'm seeing Van Halen Tuesday night in Pittsburgh. And then I'm seeing the Phillies in Philadelphia on Thursday. And then doing the show Saturday. So I'll be at the Hershey Factory eating like a fucking idiot. And I'm there all week.
You're going to go to Hershey Park?
I am. That's one of the days for sure. It's my birthday week. So
I've been at the Philly Stadium too. That's another
It's
great
so great. Yeah.
That's a great stadium.
But yeah, Jill got me tickets for all of this and just she's like handing me a bunch of bags and she's like, here, I've got all this. And I'm like, holy
cheese steaks, soft pretzels.
Should be amazing. Yeah. So yeah, so I'm great. And it's going, but her thing was you have to do a show while we're there. So I scheduled a show August 1st at the Maker Theater. It's the Unleash the Beast Tour 2015. Come see me. Yeah.
Awesome.
Come see Mike live, you guys.
Tickets, Brown Paper Tickets.
Your Twitter handle?
Go to twitter.com/the40yearoldboy. Go to facebook.com/the40yearoldboy. And I'm also on Periscope and Instagram and all that nonsense. And find me there and see pictures or photos and us talking.
Sweet. Yeah, I just started a Periscope as well. I Periscoped the beginning of this episode. So if you're new to Periscope, check it out. I love Periscope because I'll just be sitting at home going, let's talk about the end of Rambo 3. I just live stream it and talk about it. So, all right, guys, follow us on the Twitter, the Facebook at Comedy Film Nerds, Instagram, and all of that. So even it's a free way to, you know, following.
We're actually on Pinterest too.
We're on Pinterest. Mm-hmm. Following us, guys, is a free way because those actual as a performer. Numbers of followers you have has a value.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm finding that out.
So, so following is a great way to help. All right, guys. Thank you so much.
And subscribing on the iTunes too.
iTunes, positive reviews, all that stuff's helped. All right, guys. That's our show. Thank you, Mike Schmidt.
Thanks, guys.
My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. As always, remember,
Han shot first.